session number 17436, reel 4.
Yes, the Lord Louis had heard the firing and stopped to see what was going on. I thereupon had to explain the circumstances, what we were doing there, and I was quite intrigued because he wanted to know more about the arms we were firing, and they were, of course, naval small arms. But he was very polite with us, spoke to some of the lads, and after a few minutes was off on his way. The Barletta, other than Captain Jack and his peculiarities and the brighter parts of the nursing sisters, it did have brighter parts because he was a most peculiar character. One of the nursing sisters there had made contact with a friend in the south of Italy, and he said to me one day, "By the way, I want some messages delivered and he eventually dispatched me in a vehicle with these messages, written messages, to be delivered to naval personnel in the south of Italy. But it happened to be the same place as this nursing sister wanted to go, and I was dispatched to pick her up, take her down there. We spent 2 days down there and then wait for the message and come back again. He'd organised the whole thing so that this nursing sister could go down and make contact. Oh, he was quite a person. But other than that, Barletta, just there were no real problems. We did have to put the lights out on several occasions. We didn't have to open fire. Nothing was ever landed on us. And eventually, from Barletta, our unit gathered together and we handed over to military personnel and we departed to Sicily, where we embarked on the old submarine depot ship that had been sitting in Malta for years and years. It was the old Vienna, and she'd been in Malta all the time through the siege, and more superstructure had been built on her, more cabins had been built on top of that, so she was a real top-heavy vessel. And when we joined her in Sicily, there was a master, engine room crew, and about 20 army officers on board. We had been put onto this vessel to work our passage home. Well, that's a bit of a stunner for Royal Naval Commandos, who we possibly had about 4 petty officers or leading hands who had been on big ships. We may have mustered about 10 to a dozen seamen who had been on ships of any description at all. The rest had only known training establishments and the Royal Naval Commandos. So it was quite fascinating, our journey in the Vienna. She was a coaler, and our first port of call was Gibraltar, where I'd never been on a coaler before, where they filled the well deck fore and aft about 5 foot high with coal. All the places where coal is normally stored were filled, and the well decks were filled with coal. So to get from the wardroom to my sleeping quarters, I had to go out on deck, climb up, walk across planks over the top of coal, go down the other side into my cabin. If you wanted a bath, the first thing you did was cleared the coal out the bath, and then when you cleaned up, you could have a bath. It really was an eye-opener to be on a coal-burning vessel. Well, we'd left Gib. Oh, incidentally, we'd got guns on this thing, on the top of it, and the whole of the way from Sicily to Gib, we'd had these petty officers and leading seamen that knew what to do with these guns training up crews to be able to use them. We weren't over worried about it, really, but we were worried about it when we left Gib and were sent out into the Atlantic and found ourselves in the middle of a convoy as our merchant cruiser with all these guns on top of us, manned by men who, some of them, had never fired anything, well, other than Lee Enfield rifles and Lanchesters. But we survived. Every morning the captain would get up and send a signal to Commodore of Convoys, request permission to leave convoy running low on fuel. Back would come the answer, stay in convoy. And this was a routine that was going each morning. Running short of fuel, request permission to leave convoy, stay in convoy. Until one day it happened, and we got permission to leave convoy. And we steamed off in the direction of Liverpool. Now, I, for my sins, had the watch, and I was on deck, and I had been primed. I'd never been in and out of Liverpool in my life before, that there was a buoyed system going into Liverpool, and that what I had to do was to watch and follow the line of the buoys. Well, I was, and I was counting the buoys as I was going in, and all of a sudden, it was a bit hazy. I could see this vessel in the mist in front of me, right across my line. Well, I shouted on the captain's voice call to get him on the bridge, and I stopped engines, which was very fortunate, because when the captain got on the bridge, he put everything into reverse. I'd missed about five buoys going into Liverpool, and I was up against the vessel that was sitting across the channel entrance, and any further I'd have gone straight into him. That Vienna rattled and shook, everything on it rattled. Put the engines in reverse. I was saying they'd only been used to come home from Sicily. They hadn't been run for years. Anyway, we came into Liverpool eventually. I was rather ashamed of myself, but we came into Liverpool tied up. And there, our commando returned to England. It was rather a fascinating point at Liverpool. Customs came on board at Liverpool. Oh, this is marvellous. We all were given custom declarations to fill in the wood, in the mess deck. A similar procedure was happening, but they didn't give them forms. We all had to go past the customs man to leave the wardroom, give him our form to go out and get off the vessel. And I think we were all rather flabbergasted by this, but literally what happened was, as we passed the customs officer, he looked at your rank on your sleeve and said, 5 bob, 10 bob, £2, up, depending upon your rank. And they collected from everybody. They took some. They all knew that we'd got something with us. I don't know what they were after. And apparently they did the same in the mess deck. They charged them all a couple of bob or 5 bob and let them off. Anyway, we were put onto a train in Liverpool. Now, bearing in mind that of our commandos, our ratings, the majority of them were the Northerners or from Scotland. Certainly a large number of them came from Liverpool. Well, they put us on a train in Liverpool to London. When we got to Liverpool Street in London, we had lost quite a number of our ratings. We then went on from there to Westcliff. We were only going to Westcliff. From there, we were sent on leave. So this meant that Anybody of those living up in Liverpool would have travelled down to Westcliff, then gone on leave back to Liverpool and had to travel back from Liverpool to Westcliff because we had to report back at Westcliff after our leave. Well, we were a considerable number missing at this time. And I don't think anybody worried too much about it. We went on leave. A little light entertainment. Our commanding officer, my immediate commanding officer, Lieutenant Martin, touring a RN, had left us in Andria. He hadn't come with us to Barletta. He'd gone back to England. And he came to Westcliff when we arrived at Westcliff because he'd heard we were getting there. And he was going to get married. And he asked three of us who lived in the London area if we would go to his wedding and do a guard or something other at his wedding. Forget what it was he wanted. But anyway, he wanted us at his wedding. Well, the three of us went to his wedding, and I shall never forget this because we were on our way home to leave. We went to the wedding. It was a society wedding. He then said we were in a hotel. I can't remember the name of the hotel. He then said, oh, by the way, I've arranged for you three and the ushers to take the bridesmaids to a club tonight. Well, bearing in mind that we'd all been out of England for some considerable period of time, this didn't mean a great deal to us. But he had, in actual fact, booked us in to meet these girls, pick these bridesmaids up, and take them to the Bagatelle Club in London. Now, I know that Doug, one of the other officers, and I had only got a few shillings in our pocket, so we both managed to cash cheques at the hotel for £10. That was a lot of money in those days. And that evening, we went to the Bagatelle, picked these girls up and went to the Bagatelle. Well, it was an eye-opener, a nightclub in London, a little tiny little postage stamp in front of the band where they got up and held each other and tried to dance but just stood still sort of thing. And it was an enjoyable evening. Now, the young lady that, I won't mention her name, but the young lady that I was escorting had to go home. Nobody else was interested in moving. So, right, I'll take her home. So I took this young lady home and thought, well, now I'm stranded, I'd better go back to the Bagatelle and join the other two. So I went back to the Bagatelle Club, and I'm sitting there, the only person on the table. All the ushers and the other two are all up on this little postage stamp with their young ladies. And the waiter came over to me and said to me, would you mind paying the bill so far, sir? So I said, yes, right. He gave me the bill, and I took one look at this bill and nearly had heart failure on the spot. I said, right, well, leave it with me for the moment. Well, the bill I was presented with was for £12. The total bill for the evening, which got left to us, and not the ushers, were for £24. Now, I knew I'd got 10, because I'd got given the other bill when it turned up. I'd got 10, and I knew that Doug had 10. And we had a few more bits and pieces, so we literally scraped the barrel to pay for this nightclub at the Bagatelle. We left there, and we finished up at the infamous Lion's Tea Rooms underneath Piccadilly Circus that was open night and day at that time.
Corner House?
Would it be the Corner House? I know it was underground. But Piccadilly, not the one at Hyde Park. And we had our cup of coffee there, or cup of tea as it would have been, to try and while the time away, because we each had a train to catch in the first thing in the morning. Each was at a different station. So eventually we thought, well, this is fair enough, it's morning, we'll get going. Well, for three poor naval officers to try and get a taxi in London at that time was a problem. Because if the taxi saw a Yank and a British naval officer, he'd pick up the yank. They'd go past you. You were the poor orphan in the storm. Eventually, a taxi driver pulled up, and he was an elderly chappy. And he said, "What do you want, Ned?" We told him that we had three trains to catch at each of the three stations. And as the other two fellas got out, we got passes for the train, so we were all right. As the other two fellas got out, they each emptied their pockets up and gave me what they'd got. I was the last out at Liverpool Street, and when we got to the end, I think the taxi driver had twigged what was going on, and he more or less looked at me and said, "Well, how much you got?" And I told him, he said, "That'll do." And that was that. We were off on our way home for leave. We had to return eventually again to Westcliff, and having returned to Westcliff, we were shipped, or we went by train back up to Arden Tinney. For some unaccountable reason, by the time we got to Arden Tinney, we were up to full strength. We hadn't lost anybody. They'd all turned up. So we didn't have any real defaulters, but that was it. Arden Tinney, the unit was disbanded, and we were sent our varying ways. I think we must have been one of the early commandos to disband. From there, I went back to, or went to King Alfred, where I was given a medical, eyes tests, and dental examination. Now, the only thing I can remember at King Alfred, I don't think I ever did a stroke of work the whole of the time I was there. I don't think we were expected to do. We were just waiting for postings.
This is the spring of 45.
We're into 45, yes. That's right. The dentist there had looked at my teeth, and I'd got a broken tooth in the front. And he sent for me, passed my dental examination, he sent for me and he said, "Well, would you like me to do something about that tooth?" He said, "Because I haven't done one for years." Well, anyway, the outcome of it was he capped my tooth for me and took about a fortnight to do it with short visits every day. And I, in turn, repaid him by saying when the admiral came round on his inspections that I could see the people walking along the front of Hove, and it was disturbing me. I could see it over the curtains, because the dentist wanted larger curtains, and he got his larger curtains. But from there, I was sent to Coastal Forces. In actual fact, I remember a conversation I had with the postings officer there. And I was either going to go far east or allowed to stay in England for a while and then go back to the Middle East. And I'm not quite sure why, but I finished up at Felixstowe instead of going to the Mediterranean, first of all. Felixstowe, I joined a flotilla of MTBs as number one, operating at night time in the Channel. Now, of course, by this time the majority of the problems were over in the Channel, but it was one eventful thing happened there. It was my first contact with a wren on board ship. There was no real sleeping quarters on the MTBs. You did have a berth below, but it wasn't used as a sleeping quarters. But I was below. There was all the radar equipment and stuff down there. And in the morning, the crew wasn't on board, but there was work going on board the ship. And I came up the companionway, which came up just underneath the mast, which had all the radio aerials on it. And a piece of metal fell from above and just missed me. Well, I, somewhat naturally, I suppose, shouted at the individual who was sitting astride the mast working, who dropped it. I let rip, and there was a head of flaxen hair came over, and a female voice saying, "I'm sorry, sir." That was my first wren I'd met on board a ship. It was fascinating. Well, there was one particular wren there that everybody got friendly with, was the captain of the Admiral's barge, the coxswain of the Admiral's barge. Very jovial wren, very friendly wren. Always got a laugh and a joke for everybody taking you out to your boats and things. But more about her later. But I was there at Felixstowe, and we ultimately went out and met the E-boats outside, and the E-boats surrendered at Felixstowe. They came into Felixstowe and surrendered. So there was nothing more there for us to do. I'd been out on several patrols, but nothing of any event had happened. We hadn't seen anything or done anything or fired a shot in anger. Then came the problem of we had to take this brand new flotilla down to put it on the mud at Poole. Well, I know it took us a long time to get from Felixstowe to Poole Harbour, because we got into Dover Harbour and the wind was such that we had were forced to stay in Dover for about a week until the weather cleared, which was a very enjoyable stay in Dover Harbour, I must confess. Then down to Poole, and we put the vessels on the mud, and that was it. My next posting from that was still in coastal forces, was to Trieste. I went out by sea, and then we were taken up by an Italian vessel from Malta to Trieste, and there was this trot of BMLs, motor launches, that were fitted for sweeping, and being wooden craft, they swept to the depth of the fleet sweepers that followed behind. In other words, you went in front and swept down to the depth of the boats that came along and did the serious work, but you had your trawls out at the time. Well, I arrived at Trieste, saw this trot of vessels all tied next to each other, and just one British officer sitting on a chair on the stern of one. So that's it, I better go out and make my number up to him. So I went out and told him who I was and that I'd come to join the flotilla. He said, "Well, everybody's ashore. There's nobody here at the moment. Sit down." And that was it. We sat down, and he got the inevitable bottle of gin came out, and we had a natter. And as I'm afraid happened oh too often, you got talking about where you'd come from, and it then got round to the wrens, and it got from the wrens, it got to this one particular coxswain of the Admiral's barge at Felixstowe. And my friend got up from his chair, excuse me, but he went down below and came up, and he got a magnificent photograph of this wren. I said, "Yes, that's her." He said, "Yes, that's my wife." Well, we were the best of friends from then on, but it was rather a shocker. Trieste, had a very pleasant time in Trieste. We used to go out sweeping, and we were sweeping mainly down the Yugoslav coast. I must say one thing here, though. Trieste, when we first arrived at Trieste, we were tied up. I think we'd been to sea a couple of times, but we were tied up alongside the wall to our starboard side in two trots. In other words, two vessels, two behind each other, and then two more behind that. And we were in the front, and there was a brick wall of quay in front of us. And my CO, who was a Scot, said to me, "You take a round for refuelling, I'm going to nip ashore." Well, in actual fact, what he was doing was testing me, because I hadn't had command of the ML, and he just wanted to see what I was up to, and he didn't want to be on it himself. He went, apparently, to the signal tower. Well, I had just come from MTBs, and MTBs were controlled, the engines were controlled by the officer, and the coxswain had the helm. Now, you had three engines on these MTBs and three throttles, so that you could put the three throttles and you had complete control of an MTB. You could put one the other, and you could swing on a sixpence. So they were wonderfully controllable vessels. Well, I got into this ML, which had twin screws, I believe, and off we went to the fueling berth. And I fetched the vessel alongside at the fueling berth, the same as I would have taken the MTB in alongside, much to the consternation of the coxswain. Didn't worry me, he looked surprised, but I thought, fair enough, we went in a perfect tie-up. When we came back, I did exactly the same, came in along the side of the trot and stopped engines, put them in reverse and pulled myself up, sort of thing, the same as I would have done with the MTB. By which time I had skippers of every vessel I'd gone past all on the sides of their vessel shouting and screaming at me. I had my own CO on his way down from the tower as fast as he could get to sort of more or less get hold of me and try and instruct me to the fact that I didn't treat an ML like an MTB. I'd frightened the life out of the lot of them. They thought I was going to put the boat straight into the quayside. But we survived. I think we didn't have too many mishaps sweeping. We were constantly out down the Yugoslav coast amongst the islands. We were sweeping. We fetched up more 14-18 mines than we did 39-45 mines. We fetched up more of the old mines than we did recent ones. And we were actually sweeping on VE Day. And I know that my skipper said to me, we were Esso's boat, said, right, that's it. We make for the lee of an island. We signalled the fleet sweepers behind us, and they said that they were making for the same place, and that we would stop sweeping and make for harbour and then make back to Trieste. Well, we made to this harbour. They were obviously in there a lot earlier than we were, because they were a lot faster than us. It was dark. We got in. I anchored, went down below, and there was my skipper, Dow Scott, with two tots of whiskey poured out. Highly unusual aboard a naval vessel that you drink at sea. Here's the VE Day, you see. I drank this down and got in my bunk. Signalman comes down. Message from one of the fleets. You are foul of my berth. Please move. So I got up and moved up anchor. Moved away. Thought, well, that's fair enough. I can't see any problem here. Got down below. There's my skipper sitting on the side of his bunk with two tots of rum, with whiskey. So I had that, got him a bunk. Signal went down the companionway again. You're foul of my berth from another fleet sweeper. Please move. So I went back, moved it. I thought, well, this time I'm going to be safe. So I moved it as far away as I could. Went back down below. There's my skipper sitting on the side of his bunk with his two glasses of whiskey again. Drank that down. Signalman came down the companionway with another message. Congratulations, you are now sitting...